This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 17,
Episode 39.
This is Writing Excuses, Writing Bodies and Intimacy with special guest K.M. Spera.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan Song.
I'm Piper J. Drake.
I'm Howard Taylor.
And we are here live on the Writing Excuses Cruise with a live audience of writers. And also our special guest, K.M. Spera. Kellen, say hello.
Hi, this is my first Writing Excuses Cruise. And I am the author of books such as Docile and K.M. Spera, and I write a lot about, like, sex and vampires and blood.
So we are going to actually give you a content warning for this particular episode. We're going to be talking about bodies and intimacy, and we're not going to be using euphemisms. We're going to be talking about adult acts that adults do with actual adult bodies. And adult bodies run in a full range.
Yes, which is to say that as someone who writes queer and trans bodies a lot, if this episode might trigger you on any of those axes, please take care of yourself.
All right. So with that, let's dive into the actual content. So you pitched this episode to us, Kellen. What are some of the things that you think about when you're thinking about, like, writing bodies and intimacy? What are some important aspects of that?
Sure. I mean, for me, it's so important to show, especially queer and trans bodies, there's such a mystery sort of around us, even to our own selves sometimes. And we do a lot of manifesting of our own bodies, you know, when we are alone with others. I have sat down and struggled with what do I call this character's genitals that makes me feel okay and makes the character feel okay and makes the character's partner feel okay, or what conflict does that bring up? So, you know, for me, like, settling on that intimacy between one and more people and being alone or with others with your body is so rich with, there's inner, external conflict, tension, but also a sense of knowing yourself and or character growth.
I love that because communication is so key, and you can really see that in the development of the relationship through the course of the book, because you can find during different moments through the story that they're more likely to trust, and there's a building of trust over time as they feel more comfortable communicating with each other and also being self-aware, like you said, and just aware of themselves and what they need.
Yeah, it's funny because I was talking earlier on this retreat with my agent, actually, and I brought up how when I first started writing, I learned this sort of, like, they meet and then there's unresolved sexual tension for the entire book and they kiss at the end and that's the prize for the reader and the characters. And that was real bad for me. I have instead fallen into this thing which I think is very queer, which is, you know, very queer, not applicable to everyone all the time, but for, you know, me and many other people, which is that there's sex first, intimate moments first, and then sort of like dealing with the emotional and or communications that lead up, right up to it, and also the falling out and how that manifests over the course of the rest of the novel or story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Because, like, I know that we think of romance in particular as being rather structured in the order, and I have even taught how there is often a progression of intimacy that happens. But once you know what that progression kind of is expected, you can also explore how it happens not quite in that order and what that does to the character, that reaction time and that thinking about it and what exploring what works for them. I love that.
For me, in real life, there is no order, right? So we do different things with different people at different times. And it's really important to me that characters be, like, emotionally true, you know, so
yeah.
I'm with you.
So one of the things that, as you're talking about this in emotional truth, I'm thinking about some of the scenes in Docile and the way the context of the scene changes the action. You want to talk a little bit about how you communicate context and safety or not safety?
Sure. The context is interesting because my first thought was like, where is the sex happening? sometimes it happens in your like executive office at work, which I guess you're allowed to do if you're the CEO. But I think the actual context is, you know, who are you having sex with? What kind of sex you're having? What are the power dynamics between you? So, for example, even though there are many sex scenes in Docile, there's the blowjob scene. There's, as my editor has once said, the one ass-eating scene per book as mandated by God.
You know, only one? Are we, like, limited to one?
No,
or
but
it's just at least one?
It happens that way. So,
okay.
But the point of that is, you know, the sort of context, it is, you know, for Elijah, the protagonist, it is, I am being asked to do something versus something is being done to me. And do you feel like more of a willing participant if you are doing the thing, which presents a whole different struggle emotionally than laying back and having something happen to you? And then later on in the novel, he gets to have his first like real consensual sexual experience and navigates that with a totally totally different context, using language he's never had access to before, feeling emotions he's never felt, trying to deal with how to go about having some of the same experiences physically that you had the first time, but, you know, with somebody who is being very respectful about it.
Can we talk about some tools that we can use to do this well? Like, one of the most useful frameworks that I was given when I was first writing the kind of intimate scenes that I do, which frequently resolve into fade to blacks, but was to think of them as either a conversation or a fight scene. Mm. That with a fight scene, I have to think about the geography and things that human bodies will actually do. And that with the conversation, that there's something that each person is trying to communicate to the other through the physical actions of their body.
Yeah, I think a lot about fight scenes when it sort of comes to these kind of moments in books, in part because, you know, we live in a society that can be very prudish and prurient about bodies and about sex and about intimacy, but we're a society that also glorifies violence. We have, and, you know, lots of scenes in movies that have very extreme, explicit detail about what happens to a body when violence happens to it. And so much of fiction is already engaging with the collision of bodies in these high-intensity emotional moments. We're just only allowed to talk about certain kinds of that versus what is a scene of intimacy versus a scene of violence. Functionally, in the narrative, they often perform a similar thing where two characters enter a scene with different goals, different emotional states, and they exit that scene having resolved some aspect of that or evolved into a different emotional state. So there's a way in which I think of these functionally as performing the same thing in the narrative, hopefully with different outcomes. Hopefully one of them's not dead by the end of it. But, you know, I think there is a way in which that from a high level, mechanically, they can be very, very similar. And it really comes down to how we as a society can think about and interact with bodies in that way.
I actually want to provide a contrasting approach because I'm really well known for fight scenes, especially in my romantic suspense and body count, especially in a lot of my other work. But I write romance. And one of the things is, while I have combat scenes and fight scenes in my stories, I often think about moments of intimacy as dance. Mm. And it's one of those things that I didn't do on purpose, but because I was a dancer and I was in dance from age 3 to 28 actively, and also it's a part of my meet cute with my partner, Matthew J. Drake, that we danced together and we both enjoy, you know, West Coast swing and blues fusion, that I often think of intimacy scenes and how I choreograph them as dance, and whether that's horizontal or standing up or a little bit of both, and also the logistics of lifts, right? Like, it actually translates better for me. And, you know, if it involves more than two partners, also choreography helps a lot for that, because what bodies can do, right? Like, one person may be very bendy and one person may not be very bendy. And also, like, what are the logistics of actually being able to lift two people? Like, a lot more of that actually translates better in my head to dance choreography.
Well, I guess
so that's another alternative.
I think of fight scenes as also being about dance, right? It's about that movement and control. And, you know, in part, I love martial arts movies. I know we're wandering farther off topic at this point. But, you know, like, I do think dance is a really useful thing to think about in terms of that interaction and that give and take and that interplay of, you know, power and connection and emotion are all things that flow back and forth.
Let me circle this back real quick. One of my favorite MCU fight scenes is the one in Civil War where Falcon says to Spidey, have you ever been in a fight before? Usually there's not this much talking. Conversation during intimacy, to me, is one of the most wonderful things to read. I don't just want the choreography. I want dialogue. It's a conversation. It's much more than just blocking, much more than that.
Yeah, I am also somebody who is deeply in love with the first person present point of view and get away with it as much as I can. But I feel like not everyone chooses it and uses it to their full advantage. And so for me, like being in a different first person point of view for a sex scene and then swapping the points of view to show the next sex scene, like you are not just getting you, the reader, get to see the conversation between the two people, but then you get to see later how the other character might have experienced that sex or contact totally different from the other character. I had a story out with two trans boyfriends, and they both had different physical needs when it came to sex. And so you really got to live, in their heads and in the dialogue.
Yeah, and I think the progression is also important through the course of the story because, again, we're also seeing the progression of how they work together. And to come back to the point about communication as well and dialogue, I think it's amazing and awesome, and I love it, and I'm so into it. And it's also really hot, I think, in romance that there's consent not just up front, but repeatedly through each step of that interaction. And if there's not, what are the reactions to it?
Hey, writers, are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge. And I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. help, help.com/WX.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
These are, I think, wonderful points. Let's take a moment to pause for our book of the week, which is actually by Kellen.
Wow, what a surprise. That book would be First Become Ashes. It is a novel whose pitch I did not practice right before this. It takes place in a cult. In the first chapter, they are all liberated from the cult against their will. They were raised to believe that they could do magic. So when the FBI says, you cannot do magic, and also everything you believe is fake, one of them, Lark, spends the rest of the novel sort of unraveling what that means for him as a person, grappling with belief and his own body, especially since he took sort of like a sacred chastity vow, like with a literal chastity device. So there's some really interesting sex that comes out on the other end of that.
That sounds very exciting. It's called First Become Ashes by K.M. Spera. So let's move on to one of my favorite things, which is talking about how things can go terribly wrong. So let's talk about some tropes and euphemisms and ways of discussing this that are maybe not the most intimate. For instance, I had to narrate a book that literally had the line, she released his love snake from its denim prison.
Purple prose.
I mean, if you say that during sex and the other person doesn't laugh and then you will have a great time, that would be a cool scene, though.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But, or is it monster effing? Like,
yes.
Are we dropping F-bombs? Like,
yes.
We are going adult. All right, so monster fucking is a thing, and it is a very, it's rising in popularity right now, and I know of at least two books with a prehensile penis going on, so love snake would be applicable.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, people ask me this a lot. Like, how do you keep writing so many sex scenes so the language gets stale? How do you, like, you know, I name things very bluntly. I usually use cock in sexual situations, but then you'll see that I use dick when someone's just, like, alone thinking about their body. The one ass eating per book. It's like, does butt sound sexy enough? Like, I do want it to be hot, right? So, like, sex is both about characters and tension and intimacy, but also butts. So, like, for me, it's picking the words that titillate not just for the reader, but for you as the author. I mean, I'm self-censoring. Be turned on by what you write, you know, is like sort of a mantra that I think.
Well, I think that's true with any emotion that you're trying to provoke in a reader, that you are your own first reader. So I think that that's a very natural thing and not something that people should be ashamed of, even though we are constantly told by different forms of media, especially anything that is remotely off of mainstream, that you shouldn't do that thing and should somehow be ashamed of it.
I actually thought I was a little bit odd because I don't like to write the word butt because it's not pretty to me. So I like bum or behind or ass better as like a hotter thing when I'm writing. And I'll actually have an editor call me out and be like, do you have a problem with butt? And I'm like, no, it just, I don't like the way the word looks.
It is not a pretty word on the page. I get a lot, it's buttocks.
Buttocks, yeah. Buttocks is almost hotter to me, or bum is more hot, yeah. Like hotter to me. Behind can be really hot, but then it gets confusing.
I've found great uses for it, but they haven't been intimate uses.
Yeah, the words I struggle with are always like, what do we call testicles? Balls, which is like also not like a super sexy word. And then like asshole, which makes me sound like you're saying you're an asshole.
You're a jerk, yeah.
Weird side note, in Icelandic, a euphemism or a term of endearment for like when you're looking at a little baby and it's like, oh, how cute you are. Aren't you a little asshole? What a cute little asshole you are. What a little raisin asshole.
Wow.
Yeah.
The visual that I just got.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quite
my gift to
vivid.
You. My gift.
You know, one thing I was thinking about is something you touched on very briefly before, Kellen. You know, I think there's a way in which you know, there's a demand and a hunger for queer stories, but a lot of times those queer stories allied over queer bodies, right? And, you know, I'm also trans and queer myself. And, you know, one of the things that I become frustrated with is sometimes that metaphoric language, sometimes that fade to black, sometimes being a little bit more clever about how you're describing certain body parts can kind of unintentionally erase the bodies of the people that are being presented on page, right? And so how much do you find that that directness is useful or not? I mean, because there's also kind of things where sometimes there are, you know, inevitably gender valences attached to certain body parts that become complicated.
I got you. I mean, one of the reasons I keep writing very explicit sex scenes, especially for my trans characters, my queer characters, there is this air of like, are you exploiting bodies that are already exploited a lot? Like as trans people, it's very much like the what's in your pants question. And I answer that repeatedly because, I want these characters to have agency over their bodies. And like, for example, in the novelette, I wrote Small Changes Over Long Periods of Time. We have a trans character who, you know, he's a trans man. He calls his clit a clit, and he calls it at one point like engorged, like a swollen tick, which is like not necessarily something that's like super hot, but like is the vibe for him right now. And it's like, sometimes our bodies like do feel like hot, but also kind of weird and gross at the same time. And I have this agenda, which is not simply to write sex scenes because I think they're hot, but also because I want other people to think that I'm hot. I want other people to think that people like me are hot and know that we are having good sex. Like, queer and trans sex is experimental in that we don't learn about it growing up necessarily. We are putting ourselves on the map as we go, and I feel so like honored to be part of that conversation.
I think that that's wonderful. And I also think that that actually segues us really nicely into our homework assignment.
Yes. So for homework, I would like you to write a character undressing either alone or with others.
So you're going to do a little bit of exploration.
Whee!
All right. This has been Writing Excuses. You are out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses is a Dragonsteel production, jointly hosted by Brandon Sanderson, Dan Wells, Mary Robinette Kowal, and Howard Taylor. This episode was mastered by Alex Jackson.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.